This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes the return of the Sons of Brasil July 20th at 3 p.m. at 21 C Hotel in Bentonville. The Sons of Brasil will perform jazz, samba, and bossa nova with a flavor and passion one might think could only be found at a nightclub in Brazil. This series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. Tickets are available online at KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Governor Mike Beebe talks special session and another effort to attract businesses in Europe to Arkansas.
We'll also learn more about XNA's master plan for the future and if e-gas is the fuel of the future.
First, the University of Arkansas is receiving a sizable grant from the Walton Family Foundation. The $1.9 million grant is being given to the College of Education and Health Professions at the U of A to help start the Principal Fellows Program. John Pinyowski, a professor of educational leadership, says the goal of the program is to create a pipeline of highly skilled principals to work in some of the state's poorest public schools.
So what we're going to do is we're going to work with a variety of school district leaders from across the state to identify who would be excellent school leaders in the future. And then we're going to embed them into a series of high-profile internship experiences. And those internship experiences are going to be mentored by leaders that we've identified as being outstanding leaders that have been trained to work as mentors. And then the educational programming that they would receive in getting ready to be principals in the future will be then delivered through this embedded internship instead of a traditional classroom experience.
He says the grant from the Walton Family Foundation will support the Principal Fellows Program in a variety of ways.
It's going to provide fellowship money to support tuition dollars for the fellows themselves. So the students who are going to be joining this program won't be paying tuition. It's also going to provide training and compensation for mentors in the field. It's going to allow us to provide the mentoring program that I discussed, where once they're placed, we have mentors who are working with them after the fact. It's also going to provide release time to the school district so that these fellows can have a much richer and more diverse internship experience than they would experience in a traditional type of leadership preparation program.
The program is expected to train 60 future school administrators over the course of the next 4 years.
IHS Global says Northwest Arkansas is one of the nation's fastest-growing economies. Kathy Deck, the executive director of the Center for Economic and Business Research in the University of Arkansas's Walton College of Business, says the report compares the economic output of metropolitan statistical areas across the country with each other and with the gross domestic product of some countries.
So it looks back over the past couple of years, and it's really looking at GDP by metropolitan area. And Northwest Arkansas has been a fast grower and has ranked well in these kinds of economic reports for a very long time. But this one took the additional step of projecting into the future and looking over the next 6 or 7 years all the way through 2020. And they project that Northwest Arkansas will be the third fastest growing economy among all the metropolitan economies in the United States.
That would put Northwest Arkansas only behind the Austin, Texas, and Riverside, California metro areas in terms of economic growth. The report also points out Northwest Arkansas regained its pre-recession employment peak before many of the other metro areas in the country. Dex says it wasn't just a single economic sector that helped the area rebound.
There are a lot of sectors that are contributing to us getting up past peak employment, and that's what's really been great about Northwest Arkansas's growth, is that it has been so very broad-based. So when you see the kind of key sectors, professional and business services, and of course our trade, transportation, utility sector, construction, when you see growth in all of those sectors, it builds upon each other. The idea is if you are making more sales, then you need more manufacturing. If you're making more manufacturing, you need more trucks. Maybe you need more warehouses, so you build them. So it's a very virtuous cycle.
Dex says while the report by IHS Global may not present much new information about the Northwest Arkansas economy, it does confirm the area's economy is booming and presents optimism that the area will continue booming for much of the next decade.
The Bentonville City Council is down two members after two of the eight council people resigned in the past few weeks. Mayor Bob McCaslin says the reasons for the resignations were simple.
We have two aldermen who have young families, and without either one having knowledge of what the other was doing, they both chose to find a new residence that was a better fit for their families, and each respectively moved outside of their wards and finding their new homes. And by state law, they could no longer serve the constituency because they are elected by geography. Even though the entire city votes on them, they have to qualify by geography. So each of those two moved outside of their ward.
Mayor McCaslin says state law is pretty clear about the course of required action to fill the vacancies.
The statute just simply says upon the resignation of a councilman or alderman that the sitting council at their next regularly scheduled meeting will name and appoint someone for that vacancy, in this case vacancies.
At its meeting tonight, Mayor McCaslin says the council will appoint two people to fill the Ward 3 Position 1 and Ward 1 Position 2 seats, vacated by Leah Williams and Chris Suter, respectively.
The Walton Arts Center is offering insight into last week's postponed and relocated shows. According to a letter Walton Arts Center CEO Peter Lane sent to patrons yesterday, the schedule changes were made because of an unanticipated problem with the roof on the center's main building. The letter says engineers discovered excessive stress on the building's existing steel trusses, potentially making Baumwalker Hall unsafe for public occupancy. Walton Arts Center officials took the precautionary step of closing the hall and the entire building to the public until repairs on the 22-year-old building can be made. During that time, the Walton Arts Center box office will be temporarily located in Nadine Baum Studios.
The Walmart Foundation today is making a sizable donation to the Northwest Arkansas Council. The foundation is presenting the council with a $450,000 grant to support the council's projects, which focus on improving education, creating jobs, enhancing community vitality, and upgrading infrastructure.
The communications director of Bentonville Public Schools is switching jobs. Mary Lay has been selected as superintendent for the Benton County School of the Arts, which will change its name this fall to the Arkansas Arts Academy. She will take the helm of the school starting July 1st.
Partly cloudy tonight, lows around 63 in northwest Arkansas, 68 for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, partly sunny, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs from the mid to upper 80s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain, lows from 68 to 71. This is Ozarks at Large. Mike Beebe is winding down his final year of his final term as Arkansas governor. This winter's fiscal session was expected to be his last legislative session, but this summer, several issues have developed that require special attention and perhaps a special session. More fixes to the public school employees' insurance fund, including the elimination of part-time employees from the plan, as well as spouses who have other insurance options, is on the table. Also, lawmakers are talking about earmarking a portion of state funding that goes to general education needs, specifically to paying for insurance premiums. Where does the governor stand on a call for a special session, and what else might be in play? Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics recently sat down for a one-on-one conversation with Governor Beebe to find out more.
Public employee insurance special session on the soon to be called, I think. Where do we stand on this?
Well, we don't know yet. I anecdotally got some information yesterday they were changing the bill again. I don't know if that's true because we haven't seen anything specific, nor have we heard directly from the sponsors, but we've got some background information they were changing it again. So if that's true, then it's all back to square one because we have to see the bill. If the bill that we've already seen and that theoretically is being circulated among the members of the General Assembly is the bill, then I will support that bill. and we'll call a session if I get a roll call from each house that suggests that there's significantly over the majority needed to be able to pass it. The reason I say that is you don't call special, I don't call special sessions unless we can get it done in 3 days, which is the constitutional minimum for how long it takes to pass bills through both houses. And I've lived through governors calling special sessions that lasted a month, and I don't do that. If it's not, a special session needs to be restricted to something that's an emergency that needs to be done, that there's such a consensus on that we can get in and out in 3 days and not waste taxpayer money. So that's what the hang-up is right now. Which bill is it? Is it the bill that we've seen and approved and being circulated? If it is, is there a sufficient majority so that you could even maybe lose a few votes if people wavered at the last minute and still be assured that you're going to get in and out and accomplish your purpose in 3 days?
You feel confident, though, that you guys will get there on this particular issue, this teacher insurance fund?
No, I don't. Not at all. I mean, I think the feedback that I've gotten is that there's some disagreement among members of the General Assembly. Now, I know that the people that worked very hard, Senator Hendren and Representative Copenhaver, have both indicated confidence, and certainly they're close to it. So I'm, to some extent, I'm going to defer to that information that they think we're going to get there. But I temper that with, I've gotten feedback from other members, particularly the Senate, that say they're having a difficult time reaching that consensus. So I don't know that you can say as we speak here today that it's a done deal. I think in the next few days we'll know for sure.
What's your sense from talking to those House and Senate leaders of what the potential hangup is? Is it the dollar figure amount, or is it the way that the solution's been structured?
I think it's the solutions. I think there's some opposition to taking part-timers off. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some opposition to redirecting some of that FICA saving money that theoretically is going to be generated to go away from the public schools generally and into insurance payments. So those are the two areas that I've gotten feedback on. And I think it's even been reported.
Sure.
And I think some of the constituencies like the school administrators and some of the superintendents, the Administrators Association and some individual superintendents have expressed some opposition to those aspects. To the extent that they're influencing any of those members of the General Assembly, that could be what we're seeing right now.
There is a possibility of other items being put on a call for a special session. I've heard everything from prison reform to lotteries to potentially broadband, open government records. What, in your estimation, because you get to make the decision on that, what do you see as a realistic possibility of something else that may be added?
Well, if we're going to have a session, I think we need to address the problems our counties are having in the county jails and our prison backup, if we've got a solution to it. And we do. It's a little complex. I don't know how much you want to get into it, but I've been able to identify $6.3 million in ongoing revenue that could be available, not just for the immediate fix, but long term.
Mm-hmm. Where does that $6.3 million come from?
A number of years ago, we had some agencies coming out of the State Central Services Fund that were overspending, or at least expanding, and the State Central Services Constitutional Officers Fund was running not necessarily a deficit, but it was getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so that's funded with 3% off the top. We increased that percentage to 3.3% to cover that problem. Now, we've built those balances back up to the point, and that spending has leveled off vis-a-vis the growth in revenue to the point that we can legitimately afford to go from 3.3 down to 3.2. Off the top for constitutional and fiscal agencies. We're still building slowly that balance up to the balance you want to have to be fiscally responsible. That frees up $6.3 million that's ongoing money, and $6.3 million will get you 600 actual new beds in a combination of areas that already exist without building anything new, but just staffing it, so that we could reduce that backlog by 600.
What about any of the other possibilities that I threw out there? Lottery restriction, broadband, open government records?
If the legislature wants to hold off on that lottery restriction and take it up in the regular session by putting a moratorium on it through a special session, and if they have that same kind of consensus, then I'll include that. If not, I won't.
Anything else?
That's all I know of right now.
That's all you're pondering right now?
Precisely.
Could be more, though. You're leaving the door open.
Not necessarily. I mean, broadband needs to be addressed, and the law needs to be changed in that regard. The task force said it needed to happen. I've come out for it. DIS understands it has to happen. There's a lot of opposition from the telecoms, as you might imagine, but that's not ripe. The legislature's not ready to address that. There hadn't been enough discussion about it. There's still a lot of stuff that needs to be fleshed out, but they'll probably have to deal with that later.
Let's shift to a trade mission you have coming up. You're going to Europe for the second time in your administration over the last, I think 2009 was the last time you were there. Air show in London, you're going to Paris, and you're going to Czechoslovakia. Tell me what's going to go on this trip. Who are you meeting with? And I mean, without betraying any confidence.
Hopefully it'll be, they won't kill me like they did on the China trip a couple of years ago. And we were just talking earlier, I think it was, we were 11 days in country. I think it was 13 days counting the travel time. And I think we're in eight different hotels and eight different cities and provinces and all that stuff. I was ready for.
And you love to travel so much, too.
Yeah,
so that just made it so much more enjoyable.
I'm just really a big traveler. That's why I don't go much. No, this is the air show is specifically designed to address our current aviation industry presence in Arkansas from Europe, as well as potentially to get some more or some expansion. Everybody knows about Dassault, but you know, our number one manufacturing export in Arkansas is aerospace. And this is a big deal. They have this show in London one year, Paris the next year. They alternate between the two. And it's a trade show and an economic development. I've never been. They've tried to get me to go before, so I'm going. And then Paris is, as you might imagine, part of those companies that we already have cultivated a great relationship with, and we continue to cultivate that relationship. You know, we just expanded Dassault. We've courted Dassault, and
that was one of the fruits of the labor of 2009.
Right, exactly. And now we've expanded that, and with the potential for even further expansion, and maybe even a supplier or two there. Czechoslovakia is totally different. Actually, it's the Czech Republic now because they've split Czechoslovakia into the Czech Republic and Slovakia. They've had very little, if any, state gubernatorial contact in the Czech Republic. And there are a number of businesses in the Czech Republic that are looking at North American presence. And it's fertile field because, you know, now everybody's going to China and everybody's going to Taiwan and Paris and London and all those other things. We'd like to get in on the ground floor of what the Czech Republic companies might be interested in.
What kind of companies exist in the Czech Republic? Not something that every man in Arkansas would know
off
the top of their head.
The kinds of things that you would expect. They've got significant arms manufacturing, and they've got parts manufacturing, automobile parts manufacturing. They've got a pretty broad array of manufacturing opportunities.
In recent weeks, I've been asking a number of legislators about what they see happening in terms of workforce development.
Yeah.
Obviously, a big push from the last fiscal session to make some changes. Give me an update of where workforce education and that whole overhaul exists at this point in time. Are you satisfied with the progress that's being made?
Oh, I'm satisfied with the fact that everybody's got it on the front burner. And that everybody recognizes that some coordination of effort could improve everything. We've got a lot of success stories, and there have been a lot of good things that have happened. Now, you know, I continually point out to what happened at South Arkansas Community College and how they've worked with businesses down there to create these process managers and all the folks in the industry are in and around South Arkansas that need specialized training, and how that community college has responded with the appropriate curricula to make that done. Great success story. Same thing in West Memphis. Great success story with what Glenn Finner's done over there to make curriculum and course offerings responsive to the needs of business and industry. Pulaski Tech has done a good job. Even some of our four-year schools, you know, Molex had trouble with engineers, with the kind of engineers that they specifically needed, and only Purdue Texas A&M were turning out those kind of engineers. ULR changed some of their engineering curriculum to meet those needs. So we've got pockets of success stories. Fort Smith has done some good stuff. What we don't have is the kind of coordinated across the board everywhere success stories that you'd like to have. And workforce development may be the number one key to economic recruitment, retention, expansion. We hear stories that, you know, you got a lot of people unemployed, but then they've got a lot of jobs open and waiting.
Right.
Because the skill levels of the people unemployed don't match the needs of business and industry. So it's part of the state's responsibility. We did this with Hino when we totally changed that whole situation and turned something that was pretty bad into something that was pretty good. So the state has a responsibility to try to be responsive to the needs of business and industry, primarily through its technical institutes and its two-year colleges, but not necessarily limited to that. There are cases where our four-year schools and our four-year degrees need to be doing some of the same thing. What's going on now, and Senator English deserves a lot of credit, but so does his workforce cabinet, pooling the resources from all those different efforts that currently exist and try to do it in a comprehensive and cohesive way that gets the best bang for the taxpayer's buck.
Let's shift our gears to talk about health care. We've got a few minutes left here to talk about that. We have seen, obviously, a lot of debate and a lot of political potential change for the private option and its potential fate. You have said that you see you're not ready to write the private option's obituary yet. You're optimistic about it.
Absolutely. I'm always optimistic.
What makes you optimistic about it with what you know in terms of the vote count down in the Senate at this point in time?
Well, first of all, you got about 175,000, 180,000 working, primarily working Arkansans. These aren't folks laying around doing nothing. They're people that work for businesses that don't carry health care coverage and they don't make very much money. Some of them are trying to go to school at the same time that they're working 40 hours a week trying to just put bread on the table. It'd be very difficult to throw 180,000 people off of health care. That's item one. Item two, the actual math for all this is still present. We're going to be paying for this as Arkansans, whether we take it or not. These other states have figured that out. The Joplin editorial yesterday said, you know, they're closing hospitals or they're laying off folks in Missouri because they wouldn't do what Arkansas did, and it can have a catastrophic effect on hospitals. Here's why. Part of what they did in Washington, and you don't have to like them or like what they did in Washington or like Obamacare. It then becomes, whether you like it or not, if you want to change it, go to Washington. If, as long as it's not changed, what does Arkansas do to take advantage the best we can for Arkansans and for our businesses and for our hospitals and for our taxpayers? And so the hospitals are helping to pay for this under the federal law with a reduction in Medicare payments.
Sure.
If they don't get the Medicaid expansion to offset it, they're really in a hole. It's $28 million a year.
That was the crux of the Supreme Court decision that kind of changed the dynamic on this.
And it's $28 million a year just to UAMS alone. But here's another reason for my optimism. If you've got 74% of the legislature that's for this and 26% that's against it, do you think that 74% is going to let that 26 get away with that? I mean, I expect there'll be as much, because it takes a three-fourths vote, I expect there'll be as much of that 74% as is possible to force somebody's hand.
Do you worry about some of the politicians who have boxed themselves so in a corner position on this that they cannot change it and survive politically?
You always worry about that. That's why you may see some tweaking to the point that it allows some cover for some of those folks that once they look at the whole world and see the whole picture, they back off rhetoric when they were running and didn't know any better and look at the realities and what it'll do. There's a $100 million hole in the budget if they do away with it. What are they going to do with that? You're not going to take it away from education. Supreme Court won't let you. Prisons are already in trouble. Where are you going to get the money?
Going to have to start some of those tax cuts, aren't they?
Precisely.
I don't see that happening.
Well, if they don't, then they've got a huge hole. And you know, that's just the reality of governing.
We'll grow our way out of it, Governor. Isn't that what they always say? We'll grow our way out of it.
Yeah, well, I'm a fiscal conservative. I don't do that stuff.
We got about a minute left here. Last question for you. Payment reform initiative. This is another health care issue separate from the private option.
Right.
I had Peter Banco on the show last week from St. Vincent's, and he said he is seeing some really significant savings throughout their health care system.
America has to do this. I think the other 49 states are going to follow Arkansas. I think the federal government's end up going to follow Arkansas. The old fee-for-service model is unsustainable. It's never going to continue to be able to work. This is the way the country has to go, and Arkansas is leading the way.
Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics talked to Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe this weekend. The conversation Roby just mentioned with Peter Banco from St. Vincent's will be on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
In about 6 minutes on Ozarks, you've heard of email and e-books, of course. Have you seen the signs promoting e-gas?
Better for the environment, supposedly, so of course I support it. I also support more warnings so people don't get confused and, you know, hurt their engine.
Jacqueline Froelich looks into e-gas and how it may or may not alter fueling the country in the future. That's ahead on OAL.
When you sell your soul, it opens a deep, dark hole. When you sell your soul, it opens a deep, dark hole.
That's Mary Gaucher from her new album, Trouble and Love. On the next Fresh Air, she performs autobiographical songs in our studio. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air this evening at 6 on 91.3 FM.
Yesterday on Ozarks, we told you that the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport Board of Directors recently approved a new master plan for the airport. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis tells us that while the plan has many potential projects lined up for the next 20 years, there are a few proposals that could be built sooner rather than later.
Kelly Johnson is the executive director of the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport. She says that there are a couple of projects that airport officials hope to complete in the near term.
The two largest projects will be the access road and a parking deck for the facility. Down the road, certainly a second concourse that mirrors the first concourse, but that isn't in the near or midterm planning horizon based on what's going on in the industry right now. Everything is in a constant state of flux with the way the air carriers do business. For instance, when we opened, the regional jet was all the rage. Well, now the airlines are parking the regional jets, and they're bringing in bigger regional jets with higher seating capacities that get better fuel mileage. So where you might at one time have had 10 flights a day to one city, you may well be down to 5 or 6 because they're adding more seats with larger aircraft and less frequency.
She says that of the two big projects, the access road will bring a slew of tangible benefits to the airport.
Well, certainly ingress and egress from the facilities is very important to us, and having a better multimodal transportation connectivity will allow us to look at some other perhaps things we can do on the property to develop industrial issues, freight cargo operations. Without a good, reliable multimodal ground access, it's sort of hard to go out and market. So that'll open a lot of doors for us, as well as the public coming to and from the facilities.
Similarly, Johnson says that a parking deck would bring quite a few benefits as well.
Certainly covered parking would be a wonderful amenity to have. Our ready return parking for our rental car companies who do a lot of business at XNA is limited to 248 spaces, and we can't deck where their parking lot is located for construction reasons. It's not constructible due to the closeness to the existing building, future expansion plan for the existing building, and then the invisible surfaces from the airfield that we've got to stay below. So ready return parking in the parking deck for our rental cars is a great plus for us. We think that the rental car companies are very excited about that possibility of improving their service and having more ready return closer to the terminal building.
If the master plan is fully realized, Johnson says that the cost would be several hundred million dollars, with a large portion of that cost devoted to those two projects.
The access road is over $30 million, and then the parking deck is around that same number. So you're looking at a lot of other smaller projects that may or may not be done based on demand. Certainly, we won't go out and build T-hangers if we don't have a demand for T-hangers. We wouldn't go out and build additional parking if we didn't have a demand for additional parking. We won't go out and build additional wash facilities for our rental car companies unless we have a need for those. So what you want to do is put everything in there that you can think of that may be a need somewhere in that 20-year planning horizon, but you only pull the trigger on those projects when there's a need and there's funding available.
She says that airport officials are looking at a few different ways of funding the parking deck and access road projects.
Certainly, we'll look at the parking deck from a bonding perspective, using the fees that are generated through the use of the deck, as well as customer facility charges, which are generated on our rental car contracts to help offset the cost of that deck. The roadway, we're looking at different ways to look at toll or access fees to help offset the cost of that roadway.
But aside from those two large projects, Johnson says that there are other potential large projects that could happen further down the line.
Certainly the second runway is not in the near-term or mid-term planning horizon. Our air service volume, basically the usability and the frequency of use of the runway, nowhere near mirrors the requirements that FAA looks for to go ahead and justify the addition of that other runway. That's one of the reasons why we want to put it there, though, is just due to the fact that somewhere down the road it will be necessary. So we do want that in the planning document for the out years.
In addition, Johnson says that an economic impact analysis of the airport was conducted as part of the new master plan. She says that the rollover value of the airport's existence to the local economy impacts more than 4,700 jobs directly or indirectly, and that the airport has a direct and indirect impact of more than $380 million on the area economy. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
The price of gasoline continues to creep back up, with Iraqi oil supplies at risk due to increasing civil unrest there. But more American gas stations are selling American-produced ethanol fuels for a growing fleet of flexible fuel vehicles. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Shawnee Miller Vaughn fills up her car with gas at a come-and-go in Fayetteville. But if she could purchase an environmentally friendly fuel, would she?
Absolutely, if that were an option for my car. I am forced to use premium with my car.
Over on the far side of the station hangs a corn-colored fuel dispenser, which delivers almost pure ethyl alcohol, ethanol, called E85. It's a blend of 15% gasoline and 85% ethanol. Greg Watkins, sales manager, says for now a select few patrons are purchasing it.
We have a few customers ask us about it, usually just like if we carry it or not, and I'll say on pumps 1 and 2 and 17 and 18.
And he's glad his company is selling environmentally friendly gasoline.
Better for the environment, supposedly, so of course I support it. I also support more warnings, so people don't get confused and, you know, hurt their engine.
Because if you misfuel your vehicle with this high-content ethanol blend, it could cause problems down the road, says Michael Froelich. He's spokesperson for Growth Energy, an ethanol trade organization based in Washington, D.C.
If they misfuel once, it might just put the check engine light on. It might need to be a little bit recalibrated.
And it's tempting to choose the E85 brand because it tends to cost less. So to prevent misfueling, gas stations and vehicle manufacturers create a number of tells.
The nozzle is the same size, but the pumps are clearly marked that they're E85, as well as the gas caps in most cars are clearly marked. They say, you know, they're yellow if they're flex fuel capable, and they'll say E85 capable on them. Some pumps, actually, when you lift up the handle and go to pump, it'll say, you know, you're using, 85% blend ethanol. Make sure, you know, this is proper for your car.
E85 contains a higher amount of oxygen and can be more corrosive than gasoline, so flexible fuel vehicle engines are modified to be ethanol compatible.
Well, ethanol is a renewable fuel. It's most commonly made from a starch. In the United States, we predominantly use corn to produce ethanol, but we also have some grain sorghum plants that produce and generate ethanol.
Ethanol is also made from sugarcane, primarily in South America. About 17% of U.S. field corn, not sweet corn, Froelich says, is grown to produce ethanol.
We only use the starch out of that kernel of corn. only one-third of it, the rest, the protein, the fiber, the oil, the really nutritious stuff has returned into a byproduct or a co-product called distiller's grains, which is used for an animal feed.
Making ethanol sustainable, Froelich says.
What's great about it is it's a renewable fuel. It's something that we don't have to rely on foreign countries for. We just rely on some sunshine and some rain and Mother Nature, who can sometimes be unpredictable. But it is a fantastic solution in terms of decreasing dependence on oil and moving away from fossil fuels and towards renewable, cleaner-burning energy sources.
Remember gasohol? First blended in the 1970s, but it was the Energy Policy Act passed by Congress in 2005 that mandated refiners add 4.7 billion gallons of ethanol to the nation's gas supply to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and America's dependence on foreign oil.
And all the ethanol industry has ever asked for is to be able to compete in an open marketplace, to give the consumer the choice that they should deserve.
2 years later, Congress passed the Energy Independence and Security Act, which set an annual increase in ethanol in the fuel supply into the foreseeable future. But critics complain the ethanol push is not about big climate, but big agriculture looking to make lots of money from the sales of fuel corn with the help of government subsidies. And this year, the brakes were placed on ethanol inputs as EPA reconsiders tweaking America's fuel supply. Environmental groups, including the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, claim bioenergy crop cultivation poses a risk to ecosystems and biodiversity and may increase greenhouse gas emissions due to land use changes. Such groups are pushing for stricter fuel economy standards for cars and light trucks. But Michael Froelich, an ethanol advocate, says it's good for the mix.
Gasoline is a very complex cocktail. And what we're adding in is a renewable component that burns cleaner and also helps with performance issues because it's a higher octane fuel.
More than 2,600 E85 fueling stations operate in the United States, and hundreds of fueling stations have the corn yellow flex fuel pumps. Minnesota has the most, followed by Illinois, Missouri, and Iowa, big corn states. In Arkansas, we have 44 stations in 23 cities that sell E85. And if you use it, you have to fuel up a bit more frequently, says Growth Energy spokesperson Michael Froelich.
You might see a little bit of mileage drag, but that really ultimately balances out because you're saving roughly sometimes $1, $1.10 a gallon over regular gasoline, like an 89-octane gasoline. So then it comes into question, maybe you stop one extra time to fill up, but you're saving money, and then you're also supporting American jobs and supporting a homegrown economy here.
Consumers are seeing a rainbow of options at the local gas station, along with the black gasoline dispensers and the corn yellow ethanol dispensers. You'll see green dispensers that deliver biodiesel made from cooking oil. A blue handle indicates liquefied and compressed fracked natural gas. Electric cars powered by coal and nuclear power hook up to your red dispensers. And finally, there's the conceptual gray liquid hydrogen dispenser, distilled from methane and liquefied only at extremely low temperatures. But if someday extracted from water and safely contained in vehicles, that gray pump will prevail. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If your t-shirt collection needs some new additions, there are a couple of ways you can earn a shirt while volunteering. The Sparks Medical Plaza on Dodson Avenue in Fort Smith will give everybody donating blood tomorrow a shirt, plus two tickets for free to the Tulsa Zoo. And every donor will be entered for a chance to win tickets to see Miranda Lambert July 12th at the Amp in Rogers. The blood drive is tomorrow from 8:30 a.m. until noon in the cafeteria. Walk-ins are welcome, but an appointment can be made for a more efficient experience. You can make an appointment by calling 652-2362 or by registering online at Arkansas Blood Institute's Donor Express Service.
Volunteers for the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship LPGA tournament this weekend could also go home with a t-shirt. The tournament has added a feature called the Club for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Club is at the 17th hole and will provide hospitality to fans while raising money for the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank. There are two shifts each of those 3 weekend days, 8 until 1 and noon until 6. Volunteers will receive free admission to the event at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers and a free NWA Food Bank hat and shirt. To learn more, you can send an email to robert.gearhart@nwafoodbank.org.
The next stop for the USA Junior Water Ski Team is Elkins. In fact, the next USA Junior Water Ski Team will be selected this weekend at Cedar Creek Park in Elkins, just outside of Fayetteville.
You've been there.
I have been there. The two-round world record capability water ski tournament Saturday and Sunday will be used to select the team that will compete at the World Championships in Ukraine later this month. The free family-friendly venue will feature shortline slalom performances into 38 off, tricking with multiple flips, and jump distances up to 200 feet. To learn more, you can look for the water ski link at experiencefayetteville.com.
Saturday, July 5th, the annual cleanup at Lake Dardanelle State Park takes place, and organizers are looking for people interested in volunteering. The cleanup begins at 8 a.m. that morning along the Arkansas River. Should be over by 11. Lunch will be provided for volunteers. Registration begins at 8 at Lake Dardanelle State Park's Visitor Center. Trash bags will be provided and can be picked up at the registration table. Kayaks and life vests will be provided on a first-come, first-served basis. Volunteers with their own boats, kayaks, and canoes are encouraged to clean up the river on this day. For more, 890-7479.
The Ozark Poets and Writers Collective presents fiction writer Robert Lawrence tonight at Nightbird Books. Robert is a retired UA law professor who has written two novels, including Departure Lounge. Nightbird Books is located at 205 West Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The program begins at 7 and includes an open mic for poems. All ages are welcome, but note that spoken word performances can be raw. Admission is free, though donations are welcome. For more information, call 479-571-2550 or visit ozarkwriters.wordpress.com. It is Tuesday, June 24th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm just going to apologize in advance.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about opera in the Ozarks.
Yes.
And I can say Into the Woods.
You can.
And I can say Stephen Sondheim.
You can.
The others we're going to take a run at.
Okay.
There's lots of new things this year at opera in the Ozarks because Jim Swigert is now Director Emeritus.
Oh.
Imagine that after 25 years.
It's hard to imagine.
And we now have a new director. So we'll see how that goes. It'll be lots of fun.
Okay.
The shows are Mozart's Così fan tutti.
Così fan tutte.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Puccini's, you want to go with it? It's Suor Angelica, right?
Suor Angelica.
And Gianni Schicchi.
Mm-hmm.
And Into the Woods, thank God, which is one of my favorite shows.
I still haven't seen that. I need to do that.
Oh, we need to do that.
I know,
that.
We do.
That is a lovely, fun show. But I loved hearing about the others. Ashley Batchelor wrote a lovely story for us for What's Up, and all of them sound really fascinating. And it's a beautiful facility and a great year to sport it as they make a transition. So if you want to find out more, opera.org. And they're also doing several performances at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And during the month of July, many local stages either dim the lights and close the house or open the curtains to groups of young thespians. Ozarks at Large's Christina Karnatz will have a look at a couple of youth theater camps in just a moment. But first, a look at what can be found on stage next month.
The Sound of Music is the Art Center of the Ozarks Summer Musical. Arguably one of the world's most beloved musicals, The Sound of Music was Rodgers and Hammerstein's final collaboration. The show debuted on Broadway in 1959 and starred Mary Martin as the high-spirited Maria, but most recall the 1965 Academy Award-winning film starring Julie Andrews. With memorable songs like Edelweiss, My Favorite Things, and Climb Every Mountain, performances are July 11th through 13th and 17th through the 20th, with curtain times at 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 3 p.m. Sunday.
Trike Theater will perform Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book Friday and Saturday at 2 and 5:30 at Black Box Studio Theater in Bentonville. Tickets are $5. Children under 2 are free. The Youth Performance Theater will offer a variety of summer camps through the month of August, from Broadway Blast to Improv to The Science of Acting. Something for everyone can be found at triketheater.org.
Okay, and we turn the page, and at the top of the page, what do we have? We have Everyone Says...
It's on!
Awesome. And then we start back over with number one.
Jules Taylor, a resident teacher and director at Arts Live Theater in Fayetteville, leads a group of 5 to 7-year-olds through their lines on the first day of summer fun musical theater camp. The young age and little time the teachers have with them, just an hour a day for 1 week, Arts Live has found it best to use words and songs the kiddos are already familiar with. Arts Live Executive Director Mark Landon Smith says part of the program is educating them on what it takes to take part in a show, with a small performance at the end of the week. But the program can also help improve or maintain their vocabulary skills.
It does a lot across the board. It's confidence, and it instills confidence and in vocabulary and responsibility and organization and all those things. So regardless of what path these young children or any of our children who go through our program choose, what we teach is going to benefit them regardless. So.
During the fall and spring, they offer a variety of 10-week-long after-school programs, which build upon the aspects of one project, much more than they do in the shorter summer programs. In the past, Arts Live has tried to do 3 or 4 week summer programs, but found that the students were in and out too much with vacations and other things to do. 1 week camps were the perfect situation. Offering the same type of camps for the same age groups each month, some students will attend all 3 camps for their age group. The progressive nature of the programs helps students to gain the confidence they need to audition for one of the center's fall or spring main stage shows. An older age group, 8 to 11, will come in directly after the youngsters, staying a half hour longer at an hour and a half.
Doing the same type of programming where we have written a small show just for them, and their show, how it differs is since they're a little bit older, the songs that they'll be singing in the script that we've written for them are actual Broadway songs, as opposed to our younger kids, where we focus more on songs that they may already be familiar with from the children's music genre.
Other courses being offered this summer are theater art, reader's theater, theater conservatory for older kids, theater dance, and stage combat.
It's a fun way to teach people how to safely slap each other and pull each other's hair. A lot of kids enjoy that class, because what we do is we teach them the stage combat, then we create a little scenario for them, like if you were pirates, and you know, something that would maybe require a call for a bit of physical contact. So they kind of write their own little play and then incorporate the things that we've been teaching them about stage combat in that.
Macy McDowell had the leading role in last fall's production of A Zombie High School Homecoming and this spring's Bridge to Terabithia. But having just graduated high school, she has also graduated the Arts Life program. Before heading to Savannah School of Art and Design in the fall, she's taking part in teaching these aspiring young actors.
It's strange, but it's something that I love, because I have siblings that are, I remember them being about this age and taking care of them and kind of showing them how much I love performing and that type of thing. And it's just kind of like growing my family some more.
Not only taking part in something she loves, teaching will help her as she moves on to the next step in her own acting career.
I think it helps show me that it takes people time to learn things, and it gives me a lot more patience, which is something that every actor needs. So I think that's really important. Yeah, I think I'll always come back to Arts Live. It's probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my life. It taught me so much more than I expected it to. So I think I'll always come back and hopefully keep on investing in the kids who come through here, because it's such an important program in Northwest Arkansas.
And just south in the River Valley at the Academy of the Arts, Rosalie Walker, executive director of the organization, says their week-long musical theater program, All Day Broadway, gives students the edge they need to succeed in longer productions come fall.
You don't want to lose the edge, and we've just come off of big performances in May, musical theater performances, and this just allows the kids to kind of keep going and keep that energy going. And it also allows for kids who have not yet become a part of our program to get involved, and they get a taste in 1 week's time of what we're doing. And that week, ends with a big performance, so they get a chance in a week's time to kind of find out what's going on here, and most of them just want to get to, you know, jump right in by the fall semester after they've been in our camp in the summer.
For the second summer in a row, the program is a series of scenes from a variety of Broadway shows like Beauty and the Beast, Singing in the Rain, Aladdin, 101 Dalmatians, and even a singing scene from Frozen. The combination of scenes allows more of the up to 75 students a chance to play that leading role or that dance solo.
Everybody that comes to camp has lines to speak. We make sure every child or every teenager has speaking lines. A lot of students have a lead role. And the kids as a whole, as a group, they're on stage a lot as a group. So a lot of group singing numbers. So it's that works out really well that way as well. So it's really, I mean, I just, like I say, it's just so much fun. If I was a child or a teenager, this would be the camp I would want to be involved in.
And whereas Arts Live offers many programs to smaller groups to vary the skills taught, the larger musical theater camp will break the students up into acting, dancing, or singing groups throughout the day to learn their specialty. Then they'll learn how to bring all of the separate parts together to form the larger production.
Some of the shows are more heavy into dance, and so some of the students are better at dance, and so we incorporate those students into those scenes. Some scenes are more heavy on maybe either solo or duet or small group singing, and we incorporate those students. Then the choral numbers we work on together. And then there's some straight acting portions that some of the kids just pick up on. So, you know, it is varied that way, and we do divide them up through the day with the different instructors, so that works out well, you know, also to kind of tailor it to each student's needs and what they're good at and, you know, play off of their strengths. So that works out very well.
The scenes and parts will come together for the final performance Saturday, July 26th at 1 o'clock. To register a child aged 5 to 14, you can download a registration form at uafs.edu/academy or by calling 479-788-7253. For information on all of Arts Live Theater's programs happening this summer, artslivetheater.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Karnatz.
One, two, three, active! All right, everybody, make sure you take your scripts home. And let me give everybody their CD so you can practice.
Mom hee-hawed. This was the punchline she'd been waiting for. No, she said when she got a breath. You're the bad apple.
The explosion was a lot louder than we had expected. Dad just gazed dumbfounded at the sight of our next-door neighbor's tree as it burst into flames.
Prints, lace, underwire, minimal padding, convertible straps, a built-in CD player, and one that made me look like Dolly Parton's little sister.
Tales from the Sound, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Sonora. Lots of sports this weekend.
Yes.
You went to the Naturals game on?
I went Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Saturday. Did they win that game?
They lost by one.
Okay, that's when the winning streak ended, I think.
No, it ended before
Friday. Okay. Well, not that I was going to blame you or anything. And then I went to see Polo in Bentonville.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
That was fantastic.
Rescheduled
actually.
Because of rain or something?
Right. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be the opening exhibition match the Sunday previously, but it rained cats and dogs in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But they allowed me to roll out one of the first balls of the season.
Well, are you fancy?
I stayed far away from the horses, though, because they're big.
They are big.
Yes.
Have you never ridden a horse?
I have never ridden a horse.
Okay. I wondered if that reaction.
No, you should.
It's just fine.
They have very big teeth, these horses.
Well, don't put your hand in their mouth.
That's a good point. That's step one, right. Okay. My goal by the end of the year is to ride a horse. How's
okay,
that?
I can make that happen.
And then soccer, U.S. versus Portugal.
Mm-hmm, on Sunday.
I know that for all U.S. fans, it was somewhat heartbreaking to see that cross go and then the header into the net. But looking at the positive, that's why it's such a great game. Because out of almost nowhere came that tying goal.
Sure. I mean, it's a great game for a number of reasons, but it would have been an even better game had that not happened.
You know what? Thursday morning, we'll beat Germany. All will be good. Okay.
It's still heartbreaking.
It was. It was out of nowhere, wasn't it?
It wasn't.
Not out of nowhere, but.
Right. It wasn't out of nowhere. It was just unfortunate that I think the team thought that they had won, and so people were not as aggressive, perhaps, as they should have been.
Yes. So, Thursday against Germany.
Yes.
They still control what happens to them.
Oh, I know.
Okay. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
My name is Vanessa Hayda.
Adrienne Linker will be at Nightbird Books tomorrow night at 8. She's from New York City. She's on a national tour for her latest CD titled Ours Were the Birds. This is the title song. Adrienne.com for more.
I've got something here, it's a chance. I'ma make my changes as I go in the city lights dance away the stars.